and welcome to another inverted episode of Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker. He's Caelan Burrows.
Sorry, I was doing it. I was doing it backwards.
Yeah, you got to go through the thingy.
Yeah.
Through the thingy, and then we can see it because it was in the past, and now it's in the future.
Yeah, I don't have to go through the thingy though. The doctors told me that sometimes I'll just do things backwards.
Oh, all right. So it's completely unrelated to what's happening.
Yeah.
Got it. We're back and we have just watched Tenet, the new Christopher Nolan film that was supposed to save the theater and then didn't. So it's there's a lot we could talk about. Now, real quick up top, no spoilers. So we're just going to give a couple of basic reviews of kind of how we feel about certain things, but we're not going to spoil it yet. We will let you know when we get there.
Right, so
we'll get there.
So we're not inverting it, right? We're not doing spoilers first and then reviewing it second.
No. See, I actually went back to the past and changed that so that now we're still doing. I inverted it already. Yeah. So yeah, we're good.
That's better. That's better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So written and directed by old Chris Nolan.
Yep.
And it shows.
It really does. I've said this before, and I know I'll probably catch a lot of flack for this, but this is easily the most pretentious somebody like Nolan, who is already pretty pretentious, can get in a film. It very much feels like a man who's bought into his own hype and is now just riding that train out. You know what I mean? It just doesn't feel as accessible as some of the other things that, well, sure, they're still on that grand scale of almost ridiculousness. This one just doesn't quite hit the mark for me.
Yeah, it does. It feels like, so I feel like with Nolan's films, he's always got to have a gimmick. You know what I mean? So like you got Memento, which is sort of like this noir, crime story, but the whole gimmick is everything's in. Oh my, hey, it's inverted, right?
So that's right. It's the prequel.
Yeah, but you got something like Inception that is a heist film, but you got to make it Nolan-esque. So they're stealing thoughts from dreams. It's all fantastical. It's got to have this gimmick, and so this is your standard James Bond spy action film. But with the Nolan twist.
Right.
And I don't think it did the film any favours.
Yeah, I agree. And one of the things I've said too is that it's just so needlessly overcomplicated. When you strip away a lot of those things when you strip away a lot of that pretension, right, and you strip away the Nolan-esque type of thing, it really is just your typical Bond spy thriller. You've got you've got a villain who wants to destroy the world. You've got a hotshot agent, spy, whatever he is. And they've got some, even if you wanted to add the timey-wimey thing, which they do, fine, no problem. You can add all of that. But that's really what this film is. That's it. You just got to stop a big bad from destroying the world. Super simple. And look, you get the benefit of time travel to do it. There you go. And it just feels so overcome, like there's no reason for all the Nolan things in there. It just bogs the film down.
Yeah. All I'll say is that for me, there's two Chris Nolans, right? You got the writer, you got the director. And I feel like the writer has let us down in this project. The director, not so much. This man always he goes 11 when it's a 10. You know what I mean? Like he always puts in the extra effort. Down to having your actors learn backwards lines, learn backwards choreography, when really he could have just filmed it and reversed it and it would have, let's be honest, looked the same. But you know what I mean? Like this is a very well-made film and it looks good. It's just the story that's not so good.
Yeah, and I'm going to do things a bit out of order because you've mentioned that. So let's just go straight into visual effects and then we'll talk about acting and casting last. So the visual effects is really where this film is strong. They're not even just in the reverse things and the way that, things are shot. Nolan understands visual medium, Right, he understands how to capture a lot of what's going on, how to tell stories, even just the opening scene. We can talk all day about whether or not it's relevant to the overall film. But, you know, even just the opening scene is just visually, and we're not even in the timey-wimey stuff yet, right? But it's just visually stunning. Yeah. And I think everything down to kind of the way things are edited a bit and just the way that he just captures the magic of film. I think he does a very, very good job. And this film is no different than that. If for nothing else, it is a beautiful film to watch. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. Yeah. Very good. Very good looking.
Yeah. So,
and, you know, that I will say this. The inverted fighting, right? Where you've got like one person fighting forward, one sort of fighting backward. It's a very weird concept. I feel like it's interesting, but I feel like it's overused to where, you know what I mean? I guess it reminds me of like the hallway fight from Inception, you know, where it's rotating and they're in zero G. That was a great moment. But if every fight had been that,
yeah, right,
you would have been like, I'm over it. And so I feel like there's a hallway fight in this one that you see it and you're like, that was, hey, well done.
Yeah.
And then we see that fight like three more times. maybe two more times.
I think it's only twice.
But it's too much. You know, I've already seen it. I don't need to see it again in reverse.
You know, it's interesting though, because I didn't feel that actually. It didn't bother me so much. Now, I will say it is overused just a bit, just kind of in the grand, you know, thing. Look, and it's
By the third act, I was completely over it. There was so much inversion going on that it honestly looked ridiculous.
Yeah, and look, we're not going to get into it right now, but for me, part of my disappointment with the use of inversion has a lot to do with the plot itself. And just using it as a device, I think, actually takes away from how important or good those visuals are. Because, yes, the visuals are great, but the context in which those visuals are placed in absolutely change how your perception of them are and whether or not you think they're valued. And the hallway fight is a great thing. Like, you're either sold on the context of how it's happening first and then how we see it again, you know, throughout the film, or you're not. And then when it shows up again, you're just kind of like, well, this is a bit silly. and the third act is another great example where, you know, that's the coup de grace, right? That's the big one. Everything's inverted. Everything's normal. It's all just... Yeah. Chaos of time, nothing matters, is kind of how that whole thing goes. I think context matters a lot for that. But, you wouldn't have a film if it wasn't for casting and acting, right?
That is true, yeah. Yeah, and this, I mean, look, there's actors in here. They learned reverse choreography and reverse dialogue. So.
That is true. And they have dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say words.
Yeah, and some of them have names. Not all of them, which is important.
Some of them, you don't even know their names until the movie's over.
Yes. So our main protagonist is played by John David Washington, and his name is
Benjamin. Protagonist.
Yeah. You know, the old protagonist. Oh, it sounds Dutch, I think.
I think it's Protagonist Day.
What would you think of it? I thought he did a good job, but I felt like this is where the writing let the actor down. Because
it's hard to kind of get into this because a lot of it has to do with the overcomplication of the plot, which I think works against the actor, because I actually don't have anything against the actor. I genuinely like most of the people in this film. I think Washington does the best job he can with what he's kind of given and what I think he's directed to do. It's one of those things where it doesn't really feel like it's him, you know, doing what he is actually capable of, as much as it's Nolan saying, this is my, the fact that he doesn't have a name, which almost means he doesn't really have a character. It just feels so...
No, it's not almost. He doesn't have a character.
He doesn't. You're absolutely right. So I think a lot of his purpose and just, you know, the way he moves through the film is more directed than acted. And luckily you've got somebody like Kenneth Branagh, who is just he's the best comparison I could give you, and this is so awful because the movies are garbage. But it's Martin Sheen in the Twilight series, where he seems to be the only, is that his name? Martin
Oh,
Sheen, right?
Michael Sheen.
Michael Sheen. There you go. Michael Sheen. Sorry, mate. But Michael Sheen, right? He seems to be the only one that understands what type of film he's supposed to be in, and everyone else is just doing what they're told. And he's the only one that's like, no, mate, I'm Kenneth Branagh. I'm gonna be the antagonist that I would like to be.
Yeah, no, he plays an absolutely vile human being and does it beautifully, you know? Yeah, and so just to piggyback on your point, no one in this film delivers a bad performance. Everyone is solid. Again, it's just the writing. And I'll save some of my criticisms on that for when we get to spoilers so we can get through this. Robert Pattinson is good, but again, he's not given a ton to work with, so but he does it fine.
He's almost, I almost feel like he's the exposition character. So if you want to compare it to like Inception, he's the Ellen Page of the film, where his only role is really just to tell the audience what's happening.
Yeah, and even then he's not even in it as much as she was, It's so it's weird. And then for me, the one character that has an arc really is played by Elizabeth Debicki, and she was great as well. And like I said, she to me was the one character throughout the film that I could sort of connect with and side with.
And she actually has a lot of interactions with Kenneth Branagh, and those are the most nuanced character-driven scenes that from the whole film. Anytime they're interacting, whether it's good or bad, anytime they're interacting, you're like, oh yeah, people are doing stuff. This is cool. But everybody else is just kind of there, I guess. I don't know. It's hard to be. I don't want to be too harsh on the film, because to say I didn't enjoy it would be wrong, but I do have issues with it, and I definitely think that there is a good film in there. And as we get into spoilers, we'll be able to pull it out, I think.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, why don't we just go ahead and rate it, and then we'll get into spoilers so we can
All right.
talk
Yeah, this is definitely one of
candidly.
those films where we can't talk about it much without really just assuming you've seen it already.
And look, even then, you might.
And even then, you might just be like, well, I don't remember that.
And that's what a lot of criticisms I've heard of this film is that it's confusing. Like they watch it all the way through and they still don't know what's going on. But check this out. Rumor has it, if you watch it in reverse, it all makes sense. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't, and I'm not going to, but yeah. Maybe we should just write it, and then we can.
Yeah, well, look, I'll go ahead and start this.
All right.
For me, this film was it's difficult for me because again, you've got solid performances, the film looks great, but I just have such a problem with the plot, like a tremendous problem,
Yeah.
plot and the characterization. So for me, that just it takes it down so much. So I'm gonna have to give it like an average rating, maybe slightly above average. I'm gonna go 3 out of 5 inverted bullets.
All right. I'm kind of in the same boat, mate. It's so hard to kind of gauge where I feel about the film, because I definitely have issues. I really do. But there are some really great visual things that happen in this film, and there are some base plot points that I think really could work in a less complicated film. And I've got issues with that too. But I think I'm gonna go just a tad bit lower. Not a lot, but just a tad bit lower. And I'm gonna give it 2.75 out of 5 random pull-ups on things. Because I don't know why that was relevant, so my rating is going to be just as irrelevant. So it happens like all the time, and I'm not quite sure why.
Is it time?
I think so. Yeah.
Spoil the dance, dance, spoil the dance, spoil the dance, do the spoil the dance,
do the spoil the dance. Yeah.
All right, now all reverse right. Spoiler dance. All right.
Is it time?
Yeah.
No, wait, oh no, we're not doing it. Oh, we're it's doing just it not again. A repeat.
Yeah. I'm giving this movie 3 out of 5.
I've changed my rating.
3 out of 5. Quit it. Yeah, spoilers. It's spoiler time, everyone. So if you've not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled, now would be the time to bugger off. But, you know, if you have seen it, or if you haven't seen it and you just don't care, then stick around.
That's true. And look, to be fair, we're probably not going to be able to describe the plot to you in a way that makes sense anyway. So, yeah,
but we're going to try.
We're going to try. So, yeah, I don't know how much we're going to spoil for you in the first place.
Well, look, so let's explain the plot without the time travel, right?
Okay.
And I think you sort of covered it in the initial review, but it is basically a James Bond level villain who, you know, and all the Bond villains, they've got their thing, right? What's going on with this one? So he's dying and he wants to take the world with him, right?
Right.
So he's got some doomsday device that's going to blow up the world and all reality and what, you know, that sort of thing, unless he's stopped by our spy protagonist and his band of lovable helpers, right?
Yes.
His expendable sidekicks.
Who get introduced so late into the film. My God. But that's a whole different issue. We're going base plot.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's it, really. That's the plot.
Yeah, that is honestly, when we talk about stripping all the way, all the complications, that really is it. You know, he's got to infiltrate people that are, you know, in contact with this villain and go through, you know, the seedy underworld to get close to this guy and then, you know, develop a relationship in some way with him. There's your classic damsel in distress. Who, you know, Kat, that's who she plays. And she is basically the femme fatale. That's what she is. That's her whole character arc for the most part. So all of those elements are there. If you strip all of that away, it is basically a James Bond film.
The only thing that is not James Bond-esque is our lead character, because number one, he don't sleep with no one. And
that's right.
He also has no personality. So it's not the actor's fault. It's not.
Right. Yeah, and this I think is where you start to get into things that are gimmicky for no reason, right? The gimmick of him being the protagonist, like, I'm almost fine with him not having a name. That actually didn't even bother me, because to be fair, 007 is technically a moniker of an agent. It's not, you know, it could technically be anybody that takes up that moniker. So yeah, sure, the name is iconic, but in reality, it is a moniker that you can take over, right? So I don't care that he doesn't have a name. What I care about is that his character and who he is also mirrors the idea of, this is how a protagonist on paper in the most basic form should act all the time. And now I don't care whether he lives or dies. And so then he gets into this whole thing where, like, he develops some attachment, attraction, desire, I don't know what it is, but he absolutely has to save this woman, like, at all costs, for no reason at all. Just because he like met her once, and then it was like, I'm putting the whole world on you, mate. And it's like, but why? Why? You've literally walked around this entire film just being like, yeah, I'm the guy that kills people. What? And then all of a sudden you're like, she's hot.
Yeah, but what's funny is even with that, there's times where he puts her in danger. Because he's trying to accomplish his mission.
Yeah, right. So it's never quite clear.
Yeah. And then the next minute he's like, nope, I've got to go back and invert myself to go save her.
Yeah.
Right? Because she got shot in reverse, which is more dangerous, apparently, than being shot forward. I don't know how that works.
And so here's where we're going to get into. So now we'll get into the bit of that timey-wimey. So you've got that basic plot, right? So now we've got this timey-wimey thing, and I'll try to dumb it down as best I can. Basically, oh boy. All right, so basically, there's more than one reality. all exist at the same time, and the supervillain has, from influence from the future, managed to dial into both realities and be able to go back and forth. So the inverted way is the past, I believe, right? So if you go, into the inversion, you're going backwards through time.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, essentially, yeah, it's just one, right. one's moving forward, the other one's moving.
The other
backwards.
One's backwards, and they can displace actual time. So you can go back a week, and then as you're going backwards, you're moving forward in the other one. So, yeah, so they're going like this, right? So they've been able to access that, right? And my problem with all of that, right, is the way he gets this mission is a random actual mission where he is supposed to be dead. And then the CIA, I think, is what it is, right? Sure.
I don't think it's ever really... Is it established?
I don't know, because it feels like, but...
He talks to a lot of people, and we don't, you know, we're not giving lots of details about things. Like, he talks to one gent for like a few minutes, and then he's in a lighthouse or something. I don't know. And he's doing ladder pull-ups.
Yeah, right.
And then suddenly he's somewhere else, and he's talking to a scientist who's explaining inversion, and he takes it very well.
Like, way too well. And she's given him the surface level. This was my problem with the overcomplication, right? Because realistically, if you're going to tell a complicated story, this is honestly the moment where you meet the Doctor and you meet Robert Pattinson, right? You should meet both of those characters at the same time. And she should be telling him, look, somebody's plugged into the future. They're getting these futuristic weapons. They've managed to manipulate time. This is what it looks like. And here's your partner. He knows all about it. Don't ask why he does, but he does. So now you've got that mistrust, which is the whole point from the beginning, right? But now you've got that mistrust right out of the get-go. So now he's got this partner that seems to know more than he is letting on, and he's just there to watch him, to help him, you know, get through all of this. And then you can start to expand it. So now it makes sense for him to go see the arms lady, and then to go see the art dealer, and then, because now he's got this guide that's like, yes, this is how we're supposed to go through this. And then more and more pieces start to fall into place. None of that happens. First of all, I have no idea why he showed up in that place in the first place. Because he's in the lighthouse, and then he's on a ship, and then he shows up to an office, and she's like, hey, I've never met you before, but I know you.
Yeah.
Come here and watch this crazy stuff.
You're wearing a fake uniform, mate. Come on in.
Yeah, no, let me tell you all about inverted bullets. It's going to be great.
Yeah, and I mean, he literally just is like, cool, you know? Like, I remember at one point, she even, when she's explaining it, she's like, don't think about it too hard. You know?
Mate, that irritated me so much. If you are going to dedicate your film to being so complicated, it doesn't even make sense to the people who are supposed to explain it to us. Get on!
Yeah, but none of that happens. She explains inversion, and then he goes, and he talks to someone else, and then he talks to Michael Caine, and then he talks to Robert Pattinson, who's supposed to be his contact for the assignment that he's on, that we still don't know what it is.
Right.
I mean, we sort of do at that point.
And like we said, we don't know what agency he's from. We don't know where he's getting all these contacts, because even I kept waiting for this to come up, right? Because at the very, very beginning of the film, the guy that puts him on the mission is like, all I've got is a symbol and a name. So you got to do this and say Tenet, and it'll open up all the doors. Never once does he do it.
Yeah.
Never once in the entire film. But he manages to have access to everyone, every single person in the world, every seedy arms dealer, every seedy transportation.
I think we're just supposed to assume that he does it off screen, you know, that way we can also avoid all the times where he walks up to someone and is like, Tenet, and they're like, what are you going on about?
No, we got no vacancies here, mate.
I would have loved to seen that scene with Michael Caine, you know.
It's just the hotel manager. It's like, no, I'm sorry, we don't have any rooms. Tenet, are you looking for the apartment complex? The duplex down the street. That's Lovely flats,
Oh yeah, but so yeah, so he meets Robert Pattinson, and that's like his sort of like his tech guy, but also like he's the one that's supposed to know the local customs and be able to make arrangements for him to meet people. And so he's supposed to meet this arms dealer, and they do a weird bungee thing that looks good in trailers but don't really make a lot of sense for the film.
Yeah. There's a lot of that though. That was so, and I have to keep interrupting the plot, but honestly, the plot doesn't matter, guys.
No.
But that was the other thing. So when we talk about context and visual effects, this movie felt so disconnected in the visual effects because you take something like that bungee jumping scene, and yes, it looks amazing. It looks practical. It looks absolutely incredible to watch these stunt guys scale up and down this building. It's amazing, but it doesn't mean or do anything. It's just a cool moment. And so much of this film is just visually cool moments
Yeah.
that are just connected by this weird, where the fact that she has to tell you from the very beginning of the film, don't think about it too hard. And then you start to, and it's like, yeah, none of this makes sense. This is cool, but none of this really all comes together to like make me care about what's happening. And that's where I think everything kind of starts to fall apart. So yeah, watching a car drive backwards while others are going forward is cool, but it's so disconnected from everything that you're just
Yeah.
like, oh, okay,
Yeah,
sure.
there's not enough character development to really draw you in
Right.
to care about everything. I mean, literally in the span of, I don't know, 40 minutes, time really it has no meaning when you're watching this film. But
It's a drug.
it's just like there's this huge block of time where it's literally just him going from person to person and having a conversation. And not even any that develops anything. It's just a conversation that leads him to the next conversation.
Right.
And so even once he gets to this arms dealer, that just leads him to the other main character, the wife.
Yeah, right.
What's her name? Kat.
Cat, right.
Yeah. So, and then that in turn eventually leads us to Andre, Kenneth Branagh's character. And then finally, we get into some of the inversion type stuff.
Right.
And again, all of this is like we know that Andre's a bad guy, and we know that he's doing something, but we don't know what. And like we know that it's tied to the inversion technology, right? That's established early on.
Yeah, it is established that I think so through a very complicated long list of people that he talks to that we never see again. I think it's established that he is supposed to be the source of the inversion weapons that are
Yeah.
showing up. So all of these bullets and all these things that they're trying to identify the source, and then they uncover the plot of how he's doing it and then what his actual purpose is. And my biggest problem with all of that is, and look, I didn't have a problem with the inversion. I didn't have a problem with the story. It's fine. I don't need to critically think about how you're trying to justify time travel. I don't. Like, just tell me you're doing it, and I'll make up my own mind about how it's supposed to work. Like,
Yeah.
I don't really care. It doesn't make a difference. But my problem is, this film doesn't start until halfway through the second act. Like, you go through an hour and 20 minutes of just exposition after exposition after person after person after person. And then finally, when you get to the fire truck heist, that's when the film starts. Everything after that is a whole different film that's completely unrelated to this, other than these characters are people you've seen before, maybe. That's
Yeah.
it. It's so disconnected. Which is
And
weird for a film that's supposed to be connected. Everything is supposed to matter. It's all supposed to take place in like 1 week, either going backwards or going forward. That's the whole point of it, is that even the whole reveal at the end is Neil telling him this whole thing is a time pincher, which means everything that's happened has happened within a week. You do it once and then you do it again. It just from a
Yeah.
different perspective. So
Yeah.
I don't know. It was irritating that it took that long for the film to finally be like, oh, this is what the film's about.
Yeah, and look, and there's stuff that they put in there that's supposed to be like a twist, you know, to where later on when it's revealed, you're supposed to be like, "Oh, it was him the whole time." But to me, that was all very obvious, right from jump, you know.
It all became very quickly, and again, that mo so the moment where the film really becomes a different film is right after that fire truck heist, and then all of a sudden the army shows up, and they know all about inversion. That was like, what?
Who are these people then?
Honestly, I was like, I don't care about the time travel. Please explain these blokes.
They just show up. They know all the rules, you know.
They're over there explaining it to him, like, yeah, we've done this a thousand times. Don't go through the turnstile, mate. This
Oh, there's some weird technology stuff too going on with the whole don't get shot by an inverted bullet thing. That seems so weird to me. I don't understand why that's so devastating. You know, I'm not a physicist, so but I'm willing to wager neither is Chris Nolan.
Robert Pattinson is. He majored in physics. I don't know if he told you that, but during that whole, you know, meeting people, he was like, "Oh, I'm a physicist." Okay, sure.
But yeah, that whole sequence when it like it that was what. So I'll explain the scene, and this is one of those things I think you're talking about, Benjamin, when you say it's like overly convoluted and very Christopher Nolan, because it's like, why did you need to do it this way? So they capture the protagonist, and they're trying to find out where he's hidden something. And they've got the wife, Kat, but they've got her in the other time stream. And you can there's this weird where the machine is, and there's a window, and you can see through. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about, right? So you can
Don't try to
see,
understand it,
yeah.
mate.
Don't think about it. So if you're on the other side, you're in the reverse thing, but you can see each other, and apparently you can communicate. So basically, Kenneth Branagh's got Kat over there, and he's threatening to reverse shoot her if he don't give the information. But why? Why did you need to do it from there? I mean, I understand because he's probably you know, he was going to go do his thing or whatever, go reverse back through everything. I don't know how that gets him anywhere, but I don't understand why the interrogation had to be that way. Other than like, look, we got the actors to learn their lines backwards. You know, it just, it, I don't know. It felt, like you say, it felt overly convoluted.
Right. Because I understand the trick. That's not the problem. Understanding the complication doesn't justify complicating it, because it's very simple. He understands that there are two timelines, and he got fooled in one, so he's going to uncover what the foolery was in the other, so that he can go back and get what he wants. And the protagonist doesn't understand that that's how it works at this point. So the protagonist, thinking he's won, actually ends up losing, and now the bad guy has the one up. That is the entire point of everything that Kaylin just explained. And that could be done with the whole timey-wimey thing without all of this. All of this is so useless. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't. And it's so. I don't know. It's those kinds of things. You're absolutely right. Those are the types of moments where it's like, why does this need to be here? It's a much more simple story than you think it is. And that's Nolan just feeding off of his own hype. You know what I mean?
No, and that's the thing. It was like he was trying to build these moments. You know what I mean? Because like you already said, the movie has a lot of great moments, and it felt like he was just like, well, I've got to include these moments. But, you know, for no reason. I just want them.
I just want, they look cool.
You know, and that's what it really, you know, leads to like the hallway fight. That's it's the protagonist fighting this person who's sort of fighting in reverse, and it turns out that it's him from, you know, coming back through.
Which Which is also pretty obvious from the very, very beginning. Like the first time you see the hallway fight, as soon as Robert Pattinson is like, "Don't shoot him," I was like, "Oh, it's him!" I just right out of the gate, I was like, "Well, that's not a reveal. Of course, it's him." Like, I mean, why wouldn't he shoot him?
Even before that, you sort of feel like, "Yeah, okay," because of they come through the time thing. But But I had a problem with that because I didn't. We had to watch that whole fight twice, and I know you've already commented on this, so you didn't have a problem with it, but I was bored by that point. And that's when they really started to kick into the high gear, the inversion stuff.
Yeah, right.
So, to the point where we've got this, like, Braveheart-style finale with two armies that are presumably fighting no one? Are they... Maybe that...
It is...
Maybe
that's so weird.
Maybe they're fighting themselves because one's going forward through time and the other one's going backwards through time.
Yeah.
Are they fighting themselves? That don't make no sense.
I don't know. So to both of those points, again, the context of the hallway fight is what takes away from the hallway fight itself, because the whole reason of them being in that hallway fight to begin with just. One, it's unnecessary. Two, it barely makes sense because the whole purpose of it is we have to buy into this ridiculous idea that she won't survive this inversion bullet unless she gets to the other side. And the only way to get to the other side, even though they were already in a machine, the only way to get to the other side is to go to this other machine that they've already been through. And it's like, I don't buy any of that. I don't buy any of that. So their whole rescue mission is just pointless. Like, you could have had another reason for him to face off against himself. There are so many, like, he could have been trying to unbreak the algorithm. Maybe that's where he stashed it and now he remembers. Maybe he remembers seeing it in the art, whatever. There's so many different reasons to bring him back there to give that hallway fight more of a purpose to see it done all again from his point of view. But because it's not there, you have that reaction where you're like, yeah, I don't care about this because I don't care what his mission is. And then when you get to the third act with the whole military thing, it's just as blank, right? It's just, they have this whole plan where, you know, two teams are going in different order, but like they, please tell me who they're fighting. Don't even watch the film. Just watch the third act and please tell me who they're shooting at. Just let me know because I don't.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that old Chrissy Nolan don't know how to write third acts because, you know, this had a very similar problem to, like, The Dark Knight Rises, where the beginning of that movie is pretty solid. And you get to the third act and you're like, what? Well, nothing really makes sense. And this film has that same issue. I mean, I would argue that The Dark Knight Rises starts off better than this one. But, I mean, this, just at the end... I didn't feel the urgency of a climax. Right. You know what I mean? Like you've got the army doing whatever they're doing. You've got the protagonist trying to disarm the device before Branagh's killed, and then you've got the scenes with Kat and Andre with Branagh, and everything. It's just so sort of relaxed and groovy, you know? I mean, it never... The only place where there's really, like, big, intense stuff going on is the armies, and I don't care about those. I don't know anyone there. We don't see who they're fighting. And then when you cut to their protagonist, they have a little bit of weird, reversey, timey-wimey stuff going on there, but nothing that feels super urgent.
Yeah,
you know, it just felt so weird when the movie ended. I was like, "That was it."
Yeah, and to your point too, because you know, the protagonist and the antagonist, Kenneth Branagh, they take time out of this world-ending, reality-changing event to just have a conversation about morals and philosophy.
I forgot that. I forgot that they had a phone call during all that.
And again, this goes to that overcomplication of Nolan, because the whole point of the scene is to demonstrate that Kenneth Branagh has been ahead of the game the entire time. That for the last time, his last-ditch effort of the protagonist has been bested by his mortal enemy. Now, that is completely standard for a spy thriller, right? It's completely standard for you to get to the end, you think you're about to save the world, and then you discover that the bad guy's been onto you all along, and you've got to improvise and find a different way to do it. Totally fine. Whatever this was so just weird and unnecessary. And it absolutely kills the urgency. I didn't feel like there was no point in me where I was like, oh, I really hope they make it. I didn't care. And then to make Neil kind of be the protagonist, Robert Pattinson's character, to make him kind of end up being the savior. You know what I mean? Like, he's the one that sacrifices his life to save the protagonist. But everything that he's the one that saw that they were going to be booby trapped, which means he already knew. So he goes back through the inversion time to say, and it was just like, but I don't care about him. I don't know him for anything. So why do I care that he's the savior? It just, yeah, it's just so overcomplicated and groovy that you're just like, okay, great,
yeah.
They won.
And then, of course, the big twist at the end is that the protagonist was his own boss.
He's his own grandpa.
Yeah. he's the one that recruited Robert Pattinson. They became bestie friends in the past or something.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so he's destined to go on to create Tenet. Eventually.
Sure.
And
okay.
And Kat gets reunited with her son, I guess.
Yeah. Or yeah. And then, you know, the protagonist kills someone. That's the end of the film. It's in cold blood headshot. That's
I think Kat's son is Robert Pattinson as a boy. That's what
it
I think.
It probably is. Honestly, wouldn't put it past Nolan. Wouldn't it? All the signs are probably there. You just got to sit through it again. Look, a lot of this stuff I don't have an issue with. I know, like we were saying up top, that a lot of people were complaining that it was a bit, you know, it was too complicated to understand and you got to watch it a bunch of times. I didn't feel that. I really didn't. I get the basics of what it is that he's trying to do. My problem, like I've said before, is just overcomplicating the most simple of things, because we'll buy time travel. We really will. We've bought it 1,000 times in films. Every iteration of different types of time travel that you want to try to sell me, I'm on board. Give a simple timey-wimey justification as to why it's happening, and we're golden. Just move through time however you want, mate. But this, like, you know, setting us up to say, oh, don't think about it too hard, but don't worry, we're going to spend the next hour and a half making you think about it too hard. It's like, I'm not going to do that. So now I don't care about your people. Now I don't care about how it ends. And, you know, it just doesn't, I don't know.
No, look, I feel you, you know, I feel the same way. I didn't have any problems following it as I was watching it. I was like, all right, that makes sense. But yeah, it was just overly complicated and didn't need to be, you know. And the ending, I felt like, if that ending would have been more intimate, you know what I mean?
Yes.
We don't need this big army. You know what I mean? Just Kenneth Branagh, a handful of his goons, our protagonist, our sidekick characters, all dealing with something, and you could do all your inversion stuff there. But if it would have been more personal, people would have been up in each other's faces.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry, but a phone call between your main bad guy and your protagonist right in the finale? Where's the tension there?
Yeah, it's so, and again, they're literally having a philosophical conversation about the morality of destroying the world. Like, what? You could have taken that second act scene of the interrogation, placed it at the end to where that you've got your intimate setting, right? You've got Robert Pattinson and two other guys, and you've got protagonist and maybe two other guys. They go into different timelines, and all of a sudden, they get to the end, and it turns out Kenneth Branagh's been there the whole time. He's got Kat, and they thought Kat was in a safe place, but He's been inverting it. He knew exactly what they were going to do. And now they've got to have a face off. That yeah. is, and then you can subvert things all you want, but like, yeah. that just makes more sense.
And then you can have things going on in both forward right. and reverse or whatever.
Right.
But that they all, you know, sync to that one thing in this intimate setting.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
that makes sense. It's easier to keep track of everything. There's tension that's right. building up.
Right. And then I would care more if Neil managed to catch it yeah. all before it went down. He diverts from the plan. And then it's him that's able to finally thwart Kenneth Branagh. Like that.
Plus, it would have been nice to really see that it was him. Because I did not know who took that bullet initially. It took me a bit to realize it, and I didn't care because I didn't know.
Yeah,
you know,
right?
Yeah, it's just, you know, give us that tension. Not will you accept a collect call from Andre from the other side of time? Look,
just so yeah, I accept all charges, mate. I've got time. What is it? Three minutes? Three minutes? We're good. We're good. Keep talking, mate.
Hey, it's okay. I'll invert the charges later. You know?
He just goes to a payphone. He's just spitting all the quarters out of the telly.
Oh, man.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my God. Hey. Yeah. So, look, this has been Cineblokes. I'm Benjamin Baker.
I'm Caelan Burrows.
And we will see you after the next film.